The Meaning of Geranium from The Secret Language of Plants by Andrina, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 7 Trinkets. On the third night, Hermione announced that she would be sleeping alone from now on because she didn't want to become dependent and needed to overcome the trauma. But what she meant was that she wanted the bed all to herself. It was big and fluffy and full of pillows that they had donated and were not getting back. Possibly, she had also come to realize that as good as the two boys were to deter nightmares, there was also a very high price to pay for having them there. They went back to what used to be Regulus's room.
"Is it weird that we're sleeping in the same bed?"
asked Harry while carefully lowering himself on the tragically smaller-than-usual tower of pillows.
"It's cold," said Draco with finality, burrowing deeper under the blankets.
It was, although it was less cold as of late and less lonely. But on the other hand, choosing another bedroom and making sure it was habitable seemed like such a bother. They had cleaned the house, but that didn't mean that it was automatically usable just because they had removed most of the immediate dangers. There was the smell of old air and naphthalene, for example. Besides, when they were together, they could also banter, which more likely than not was the true reason why Hermione had kicked them out.
"What do you think the color blue tastes like?" asked Harry in the darkness.
"Blueberries," said Draco, lightning quick. "Now go to sleep."
"That actually makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Draco."
"See, Draco was good." Draco answered and put a quick end to the nonsense, as he called it. It was not at all like in the Gryffindor dormitory. In the Gryffindor dormitory, when Harry found himself with a burning question to ask in the darkness, things were much different.
"Guys, are you awake?" Harry would ask.
Ron would pretend to be asleep, because he already dealt with Harry during the holidays and during the day, and he had done his part, all right? So he feigned sleep, hoping that then he would fall asleep before the madness started.
"No,"
Seamus would say, invariably followed by Dean snickering.
"Yes, sir, what do you need?"
Neville would say, because Neville was soft and pure.
"How come centaurs don't wear jackets? It has to get nippy in the forest."
"For Merlin's sake!"
The previously asleep Ron would cry before pressing a pillow over his head. Dean would laugh some more, and Seamus would say something to the effect of hating Harry and begging him to shut up because it was a Tuesday night.
"I have no idea,"
Neville would admit, knowing that the question would now haunt him, his mind taken over by the image of Cardigan wearing centaurs. So, of course, since no one would offer adequate explanations, Harry would think up some theories. Would centaurs be interested in scarves? And Dean always, always had to encourage him.
"Think blazers!"
And they would all lose an hour of sleep at the very least, and Harry would still not be satisfied, and in the morning, everyone would be tired and grumpy. But not with Draco. Draco was quick. Draco put Harry's frenzied mind to rest. Draco told them that, even in the top of a centaur that was human-shaped, they were too hairy to feel the cold, and in any case, the clothes would get ripped in the forest. They were good, those first 3 days. There was music and good food and healing. But Hermione wasn't one for inaction. She had been trying to contact Harry for a while, and now she had him before her, although through a rather unexpected route. She had to tell him, then, all she had learned about Horcruxes.
"It's not like I lied to them. I merely didn't discuss it," said Harry.
"Yes, master,"
answered Creature pleasantly.
"There's no reason to react like this, don't you think?"
"Yes, master."
"A man is entitled to keep his private affairs private."
"Yes, master."
"And frankly, I would expect this reaction of Hermione. She's really passionate, but I thought that Draco would take it better. He's quite self-controlled."
"Yes?" prodded Harry, while Creature appeared suddenly fascinated by his feet. "No?"
"Master Draco is a Malfoy and a black master,"
pointed out Creature sagely. Harry mulled over this point, as it deserved.
"I thought Sirius might be a bit of an oddball, but he isn't, isn't he? He's just like everyone in the family."
"Creature couldn't possibly comment,"
said Creature, shaking his head in a way that rather betrayed his words. Oh, the things he could say.
"Master,"
he added as an afterthought. There was a loud thump on the door.
"Harry, come out this instant!"
yelled Hermione.
"I'm going to kill you!"
"She's not really going to kill me," Harry said to Creature.
"Of course not, master."
"It's just that she's upset for my sake."
"Master is very fortunate."
It had started like this. Hermione called them to the library to talk. She had learned of a way to defeat Voldemort, she said. She didn't know everything yet, but she knew the essentials. Voldemort had made a Horcrux.
A what?
Asked Harry. The word was so strange he thought he had spaced out.
A Horcrux, Harry. It's something in which you deposit a piece of your soul, extracted with dark magic. This is why he came back. As long as the Horcrux remains intact, he won't be able to die.
There are no words that can easily follow such announcement, and so none of them said anything. After a while, Harry rose from his seat and went to put some music on to fill the silence. The first chords of some folk song came to fill the space of the library.
Okay, he said as he went back to his seat. Okay, so does anyone else know about this?
No. No, because it feels like the kind of thing that should be public knowledge.
If the Dark Lord suspected that Dumbledore knows about it, he would upgrade his security, pointed out Draco. Obviously he can't be carrying the Horcrux with him. He must have hidden it.
Ah, well, in that case.
Harry was taking it very well. The music helped. Actually, Hermione started.
I discussed the topic with Dumbledore. He'd been planning on telling you, and after you left, he thought that I could help.
She smiled faintly, trying not to show how deeply pleased and honored she was that he had chosen to confide in her and made her help in the research. To know you had Dumbledore's trust, to hear that he wanted your help, why, that was magical in 100 different ways. People rushed to do Dumbledore's bidding because it felt so good to be able to help, to make him proud and satisfied with your work. Harry was going to comment that, again, this kind of thing should have been mentioned earlier. How to defeat the murderous Dark Lord, a guide. Perhaps not as soon as he stepped foot in Hogwarts, but definitely after Voldemort made his return, at any point during that mad year before Dumbledore's deposement. But he didn't get the chance to express his annoyance because Hermione was speaking again.
He thought that he might have made more than one.
What?
Exclaimed Draco as he jumped in his seat.
He ripped his soul apart more than once. Are you...
He stopped, mouth hanging open and eyes staring in the middle distance.
No, actually, that makes a lot of sense. It hasn't been done before, and no one would think it even possible, but yes, of course. Once you perform the terrible process of ripping and extracting a piece of your soul, why let the knowledge go to waste, dear Merlin?
With these last few words, Draco slumped down in the armchair. Draco took personal offense with many things.
How many? Said Harry.
The way he spoke, it was terrible, such calm and nonchalance. Here are these mysterious and highly guarded objects cursed with a piece of Voldemort's soul, and he asked how many, as if the answer could make a difference, as if somehow there would be a number that could be considered not too bad. That's a low number of pieces of Voldemort's soul to track down and destroy. Once we're done, let's not forget to buy some milk. The way Harry spoke, that perfect calm, it gave them goosebumps and put something cold and metallic in their stomachs.
Actually, can they be destroyed? Said Harry.
He blinked and removed his glasses and peered at the lenses, which indeed were a bit dirty.
Answer that first. There must be a way to destroy them.
Yes.
Good,
Harry smiled, putting his glasses back on after tapping them with his wand.
How many, then?
Dumbledore thinks he must have intended to make 7 before he was stopped by... you.
Oh, for Merlin's left nipple.
Draco continued his slump until only his head and upper back were resting on the armchair.
7.
Which both Hermione and Draco, who had taken arithmancy, informed him was a very powerful number. It was lower than 42, or God forbid 72, but still, Harry had thought that 3 was a reasonable number. 7 was a bit too much. A Horcrux could only be destroyed when it was damaged beyond magical repair, which didn't do much to uplift the mood when one had spent years in a magical school and witnessed firsthand how teachers and even prefects fixed almost everything. Nothing Seamus Finnegan or the Weasley twins ever did had left lasting damage.
So to summarize, there's an unknown, but probably lower than 7, number of cursed objects that contain Voldemort's soul, and that we expect are heavily guarded, in addition to being nearly indestructible, said Harry.
It helped if you tried to look at the problems coldly. Other things helped, too. Harry had the fortune of having learned of these things.
What time is it? Surely it's near lunchtime or dinner time or something.
What?
I'm going to make a cake, said Harry decisively, getting up from his armchair.
Draco and Hermione followed because he had said cake and he had risen.
We can discuss the rest later. For now, cake.
No one could find any fault with his reasoning. Hermione and Draco kept talking about it, of course, but Harry had reached his limit of attention to spare. They went to the kitchen, and while Hermione relayed all she had read on the topic and Draco, brilliant Draco, listened and nodded, Harry dove into the familiar magic of taking eggs and plain flour and transforming them into deliciousness. Now that he thought about it, he should have proposed this as an alternative grading method to McGonagall. It was a transfiguration, after all, and she struck him as a woman who would enjoy creme brulee. They had cake for breakfast the next day. However, the Horcrux talk break only lasted until after lunch, when once again they had reconvened at the library. From what little was known of Horcruxes, both Dumbledore and Hermione thought the diary had been one, and Dumbledore had found another, a ring, which he would destroy soon. They had no idea what the other Horcruxes could be. Something symbolic, they thought. Something meaningful for the man who used to be Tom Riddle. Something made with murder that carried a piece of Voldemort inside. Like the diary that took possession of Ginny. Like the cursed ring that almost took Dumbledore's life. Dumbledore had some ideas, but he hadn't shared them with Hermione. He would, he said, in time, but he was very insistent that they were about Harry and Harry's quest to fight Voldemort. He was the one the Dark Lord marked as his equal, the only one who could bring about Voldemort's death, as either must die at the hands of the other, for neither can live while the other survives. That's what the prophecy said. Oh, no. No, no, no. Trust a Slytherin, and Draco in particular, to see the connection before anyone else. Trust him to see what ought to remain hidden. No, 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 shut up, shut up, shut up! Draco—
Shut up, you poison! You blight! You call yourself his friend!
Draco screamed, rising so fast that his chair fell down.
And you'll go through with this? Dumbledore's loyal pet, coming here and spinning his lies until it's too late. Some friend you are, spider!
Such friend I am! Of course!
Hermione screamed back just as loud.
What's the matter with you? Obviously Harry's the most interested in stopping Voldemort when he's going after him. Of course I want to know about Horcruxes. I don't like it, but this is how it is and I'm trying to help.
Oh yes, and it'll be so neat. Have him pick up and destroy all the Horcruxes.
Yes!
Hermione said over him.
Before killing himself!
Finished Draco.
Why would I...
Harry started to say, who was completely lost, and had no idea why everybody was suddenly yelling. He had been thinking about rabbits. He had been thinking about things that could be a Horcrux. He wasn't sure how he came to rabbits.
What? Of course he won't.
Hermione didn't finish her sentence. Only now hearing what Draco had said, only now starting to unravel his words. But of course, Horcruxes were made with murder. And neither Voldemort nor Harry had died that night, but his parents had. She stared at Draco with huge eyes and a crushed expression at her sudden realization, a betrayal almost as big as Ernie's.
I just don't see why I would do that, said Harry again, deeply confused.
So he thought he might be immortal and was a bit worried about it. That didn't mean he was about to test his theory by trying to kill himself.
Because you're a Horcrux!
Draco yelled, turning to Harry, too riled up to stop now.
For Merlin's sake, Harry, you're a parcel mouth! Voldemort made you into a Horcrux that night, whether he knows it or not. A soul that has been torn 6 times already, it must have been ragged and tattered.
Draco waved his hands in the air, his words running out of his mouth at full speed.
And Dumbledore knows! He has to have known! The moment you spoke with that snake in second year, he has to have known! And he knew that when he was sharing all this information with your friend!
Draco kicked his fallen chair for emphasis. His chest was heaving, and he was pale, paler than usual, despite the red that came to his cheeks, as if he had sprouted shadows under his eyes from just uttering those words. His blonde hair was tousled from his outburst. Behind the gray of his eyes, Harry thought that he could see the gears of his brain still moving, thinking, thinking, picking not one, but each and every one of the threads, and examining all the implications. Hermione had covered her mouth in horror, and her eyes were wet. That was the worst part, that Draco's quick thinking was supported by Hermione's solid logic, if she agreed.
A Horcrux,
Harry whispered. An object with a piece of Voldemort's soul that could only be removed with tremendous magic, Hermione had said. Tremendous magic. Never mind the having a piece of Voldemort's soul thing. It had to be removed through tremendous, absolute, terminal magic.
Harry, I didn't know. I swear I had no idea. I'm so, so sorry.
Hermione's lips were white and trembling. In fact, all of her body was shaking.
Oh, my fucking God,
said Harry as his knees buckled down.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Harry, despite his occasional tendency to physical violence and his perpetual sass, was not given to cursing. Remus didn't like children cursing, and Severus considered it lazy when one could choose more cutting words. Said Harry from the floor, having obviously exhausted his reserve of swear words.
Fuck, yes. Oh, my God. Merlin and McGonagall and everyone. I'm so relieved. A Horcrux!
Draco, who had been so horrified at himself for his insensitive outburst, now looked at Harry with bulging eyes. He had been so angry at the deception, so angry and so scared for Harry, and then there had been 30 seconds of absolute disgust at himself for his lack of self-control for blurting out such horrible news when his brain was telling him now that the sensible thing was to hide it from Harry and find some other plan that didn't involve the self-sacrificing idiot sacrificing himself. But Harry was on the floor laughing and crying a little bit.
"I don't think he understood," whispered Draco.
Hermione hadn't moved, both hands over her mouth, slain by the revelation in her own naivete. She was now thinking back to those funny words from Harry's cousin, and she saw why they had rung discordantly then. But Dumbledore's words made such a sweet and all-encompassing melody, a music that took over all of your world. It had been too easy to ignore the alarm call, the ugly percussion in the background calling for her attention. Dudley had spoken as if Dumbledore were the one insisting Harry stayed at the Dursleys. He spoke as if Dumbledore were the one bringing him back when he had always seemed like an ally against the cruel stubbornness of the Ministry. Hermione saw now, with that cold logic that could sometimes be so cruel, what better way to gain Harry's trust than to put him in pain just so he could later relieve him? What better way indeed but to create a problem and then solve it? And Harry, he would be in his debt, wouldn't he? He would love him for that. He would listen to him. It shouldn't be possible, but her hair had bristled. How sweetly she had listened to Dumbledore's words, how good it felt that he chose to trust her and honor her with this information. Hermione felt sick in her stomach.
"Oh, Crux,"
Harry was saying between laughter and sobs.
"That's why! Oh, God! This is so great, I'm not a talk wizard!"
Draco wanted to make a joke and say that he wasn't even a plain wizard, but he felt as if he had thrown up his heart and his voice, and they were now gathering dust on the library floor.
"This is excellent!"
"Harry?"
called Hermione, barely lifting her hands from her mouth. Maybe there was something else they didn't know. Maybe they had done something to Harry, some sort of charm to make him lose his senses and want to die after he heard the words.
"We need a snake. Hermione, you have to conjure a snake, but still, I'm pretty sure I can't speak parcel talk anymore. I'm not a Horcrux, not anymore, you see, not since..."
So this is how Harry ended up hiding with Creature in the kitchen. Because failing to share that he had never been closer to death than previously thought meant that now his friends wanted to amend the situation. They were not going to kill him, despite their protestations. Harry knew it was quite the opposite, but they were both unexpectedly infuriated by his cavalier attitude towards his own murder almost 2 years ago, and they hadn't even seen the scar on his chest. So Harry had thought it best to make a strategic retreat until they calmed down. He was so happy. It made so much sense. He died, he got better. He was not destined to become a monster more powerful and cruel than Voldemort himself. He was going to make cream puffs, perhaps barricade the door first, because he could hear Hermione saying Alohomora again and again, even though she didn't have a wand. Neither did Harry. They were so upset they couldn't even think of looking for Harry's wand in the bedroom. At last Draco ordered Creature to open the door. Creature gave an apologetic look to Harry before complying, because he had always liked Draco better, and he always did what he wanted.
"Come on, Creature, my man, my elf, don't!"
The door opened. Harry was tackled and mauled by a furious Hermione, who alternated hugging him, kissing his cheek, and repeatedly hitting him in the chest. Because how could you, Harry Potter? How could you die and not tell us anything, you moron? Draco wasn't much better. Draco looked like he had wanted to strangle him. Instead, he lifted Harry's sweater,
"Hey!"
to look at the horrible scar that covered his chest.
"You utter prat,"
he said, dropping the hem of the sweater before throwing his arms around Harry's head.
"Look at it this way. We're already down 2 Horcruxes, and it's only Wednesday."
said Hermione, punching him in the arm. Draco still had Harry's head locked between his arms and chest. Harry's glasses were askew, and he couldn't see much beyond what he suspected was Draco's clavicle. Very nice clavicle, by the way. It smelled nice. A hand was petting his hair, and it was nice and grounding. For a while, no one said anything.
"People used to say that I would become a dark wizard," Harry confessed in a whisper, "that I would be greater than Voldemort. that I'd mastered death and I would bring it upon this world. Starting by releasing the animals used in transfiguration. Don't be dense, Potter. You're softer than custard.
Harry laughed. So did Hermione, pressed as she was against his side.
So I was thinking I should bake...
I want a cheesecake, said Hermione.
I don't care if you don't know how to make one. You were going to be making me cheesecakes for the rest of your life, Harry. How could you not say anything?
Harry could point out that he had been in shock at first, and then Dumbledore had imposed radio silence, and then they had been at the Burrow, and it was crowded, and frankly Harry wasn't about to discuss his possible necromancer supreme nature with Moody nearby. Or he could look up the cookbooks and bake a cake and bask in the golden feeling of not being a monster and having people who would love him even if he were. When they were in the wonderful haunted house, everyone had their own bedroom, even if they weren't very big. Here they had spent more time than not sharing a room and a bed. But it had been in a time of cold, when changing clothes was done at full speed, because standing barefoot would chill you to the bone. This is to say that it was completely understandable that Draco had missed Harry's scar. Harry had months of hiding it from the Gryffindor bedroom, always changing shirts with his back to the room. Not tonight, though. Tonight, although it was still cold, Harry came in front of Harry and gently grabbed his hands when he was about to put on his undershirt. Quidditch sweaters were warm, but you had to put on a softer shirt below to avoid chafing. Draco gave him a tentative look, asking silently for permission before pushing Harry's hands down and away from his chest. Harry had been so careful to keep the scar hidden, but it meant something else now, didn't it? It was not the symbol of his future to come. He didn't have to hide it anymore, not if he didn't want to. He had no idea why Draco would want to look at it, though. The bruised purple had faded long ago. The lines were now a faint dark red or a silvery white, depending on the light.
"It's like a snowflake," said Draco.
He was tracing the line of one of the branches from Harry's heart up, his little and ring fingers coming close to Harry's nipple. Draco's left hand was still grabbing both of Harry's hands. Harry hadn't noticed that before, that Draco was still holding his hands. They used to hold hands all the time, and it meant nothing. It was just comfort and the warm reminder that there was someone else standing by your side. But now it was different, and Harry didn't know what it meant, only that his heart had vacated his chest and traveled down his arms to meet Draco's warm hand.
"Did it hurt?" asked Draco softly. He was doing everything so softly. "I don't remember. I think it did. A little bit."
Draco pressed his palm over Harry's chest, his thumb right over his heart. Harry breathed and saw Draco's hand move with his chest as his lungs expanded. Such physical proof that he was alive.
"He didn't... Father didn't mention any of this when he told us about Voldemort's return. It was as if you hadn't been there."
"I was.
Yes."
"And so was your father?"
"Yes."
Draco took his hand away and Harry quickly got dressed. He had goosebumps on his skin and his hair was standing. Maybe it was cold or maybe it was the air suddenly charged with electricity.
"Draco," said Harry as they were getting in bed. Well, Harry was.
Draco was standing by the dresser with a lost expression, his hand held open as if he didn't dare close it.
"Draco."
Harry kept talking as if he didn't need Draco to answer to know that he was listening. Draco often did. No, Draco always did. He listened and he answered.
"If everybody were Animagi, what do you think they would be? I think Neville would be a pumpkin."
Somehow Draco managed to look as if a layer of glass that had been standing between them had just broken, and the shards quickly dissolved into sand. He looked at Harry, away, and then back at Harry again. He started to answer before he took his first step to the bed. Neville Longbottom couldn't be a pumpkin, because that was not an animal.
"But like an animated pumpkin that could shuffle around."
Harry moved side to side, mimicking the imaginary animated pumpkin.
"It would be so cool if people could turn into trees. Imagine a tree in the middle of a Hogwarts corridor."
Draco imagined.
"Longbottom strikes me more as a hedgehog," he said.
"Oh, yes, that's good."
"Draco."
"Yes, I'm here,"
said Draco, face buried in his pillow.
"Chameleons are so weird. You would think they're made-up creatures."
"Yeah."
"Or like the result of a magical accident."
But they're not.
No.
Well, that's a relief. I just thought, what if they were made by a wizard hundreds of years ago, and they escaped, and then it was too late to take them all back, so we've had these magical creatures all this time, and normal people knowing about them.
But it's not so.
Good, good. Good night. They still had much more to talk about the Horcruxes, but for now they dropped the topic like a piece of red-hot iron. Harry was still being consistently hit with cushions by the two of them, and threatened with sitting by and watching and not helping at all after relaying the information to numerous other people. "What is going to kill you? Oh my God! Mrs. Weasley is going to cry at you! If you break Remus, I won't forgive you. Sirius is going to dunk you in a lake and I will watch." So it was a bit difficult to hold any serious discussion on the matter of Horcruxes. "Next you'll tell us Longbottom is one too." Plus, thinking about Horcruxes also meant thinking about what Dumbledore knew and hadn't said, and what other things he might have known and chosen to keep for himself. It threatened to awaken a black rage, something with a red head, long and coiled and ugly. Better to wait until the air in the house had cleared from all the emotions and tension. One of the walls in the main corridor had started to bleed, and it was unclear who was responsible for it, but it was obviously connected to their feelings of betrayal. Hermione, Harry was pretty sure it was her, mostly because when he thought about Dumbledore and the things he didn't say and the things he did, he could feel the air becoming colder and glass-frosted. So the bleeding wall had to be Hermione. Until then, there were many other things to do. The current topic of choice being bathrooms. Hermione was there, in all her glorious legal adulthood, it was time to deal with the bathrooms. Hermione's expression of horrified disbelief was absolutely hilarious. She had assumed they were exaggerating when they spoke of hair growing on the floor of the first floor bathroom. They were not. There was hair, thick and black, covering the tiles. It was just hair. They had poked it with a broom and thrown some crumbs on it to see if they were eaten and nothing happened, but no one wanted to step on it, even with slippers. Even with heavy-duty boots used for dragon training. The good news was that the vampire situation in the second-floor bathroom was summarily resolved. The bad news was that they couldn't really say that they had removed the vampire from the room. Rather, they, well, Draco, had changed its composition. What was once a single solid entity was now a multitude of liquid stains peppering the walls and floor. The shower curtain was ruined. "I don't think that was a vampire at all," said Hermione, who also couldn't remember when they were supposed to have learned about them, but had studied the topic on her own. As soon as they opened the door, a creature that seemed to be made of skin, bones, and vengeance lunged at them, jaws open and long fingers extended. Draco, still looking at his hands, said nothing. There had been a flash of red light and a splat, and then the possibly vampire was no more. So for that night, anyone taking a bath would have to do it in the kitchen as usual. Her left arm was still healing. A scab only just now starting to form over the deep gashes. The bruises had faded pretty well, but there were other matters in the aftermath. She slept, and she ate, and she refused to be stopped by the trauma. But she also avoided her reflection in the mirror, especially when she was changing clothes, because she just couldn't stand the sight of her scarred body. The floorboards and the stairs and the corridor to their rooms were the wrong color, and whenever Hermione caught a glimpse of them, she felt like she would throw up. She learned to walk with her head held high and sometimes with closed eyes, and didn't realize that the color made her sick because it was the exact same one as the floorboards of the room where she had been tortured. Some days Hermione felt determined, and some days she felt like turning into a ball and crying and crying. It has been said before, healing takes so much more time and energy than hurting. Harry helped. Harry helped immensely because he was a constant source of distraction who occasionally brought cake. Harry, despite his absurd belief that he could become an evil wizard, was gentle and kind, and just being near him brought a quiet feeling of happiness. Because Harry knew about suffering, oh, did he? But he knew even more about happiness, and above anything else, about the things that make life worth it. You may think that baking a cake or drawing a hot bath with bubbles or stopping everything to wonder if other cultures called the Draco constellation something different is not very important and too pedestrian. But then you may as well give up. Most cultures still saw a dragon, but Arabic astronomy had two hyenas attacking a baby camel protected by four bigger camels, and in the background there were some nomads watching, and Harry just couldn't believe it. Come on, you went from a dragon to a tableau full of people. He loved it. Oddly, Draco helped too. Draco had been the one to guess she would have nightmares, and the one to hold her hand when she woke in quiet terror that first night. Harry had been dead to the world and completely useless, save for the funny image of a train made of blue smoke emerging from his temple, circling the room, and vanishing back in his hand. Draco had been the one to find Hermione clothes to wear, comfortable and warm and pretty. And Draco had been the one to bring her a book from the library. An old collection of wizarding tales that, as far as he remembered, weren't outrageously racist. Hermione felt as if there was something unsaid in that gift. Something that they both recognized in each other, but they didn't acknowledge in themselves. Something like living in the aftermath of pain. Something like wishing to forget the same house. Every morning they received the Prophet. Every morning they read about the world going crazy. The sports section was exclusively about Crumb now, as if there were no other Quidditch teams or players and it was nasty. The Horcrux quest was still there, hanging in the air, and they knew they had to do something about it, but it was still a very sore point. That ache was actually kind of helpful because the deception made all of them, and especially Hermione, want to know more, want to read and make sure they understood what they were doing and, more importantly, how to destroy a Horcrux. There wasn't that much literature on the topic, but fortunately, this was the right house for that kind of research.
Harry! Harry! Are you awake? Harry!
For Salazar's sake, woman,
said Draco from under the blankets.
What?
Don't you knock?
Oh, said Hermione. Harry?
Hermione didn't knock. It was one of the few faults of her character. She didn't knock, and she butted on the boys' dorm constantly without announcing her presence first. For a few months in the fourth year, or the totality, Ron had been particularly agonizing about his appearance, and he had started putting on cologne and brushing his hair before going to bed. Many times Neville slept dressed in his robes just in case. Dean, who was turning into a handsome devil and he knew it, started going to bed bare-chested until they called him on it. He didn't even want anything with Hermione, he was just hoping that she would carry a flattering description back to the girls' dormitories.
Harry, wake up!
said Harry at last. Hermione was poking at every bulge she could see in the blankets. Half of them were Draco's, who was squirming to a corner of the bed to get away from her fingers.
It can't be morning yet,
moaned Harry.
I refuse. Renegades don't wake up this early.
It is still dark outside,
said Draco in a resentful tone. Maybe he should start looking into getting his own bedroom, one on the second floor, so he would have the now clean bathroom all to himself.
Harry!
Pressed Hermione again.
What?
What did you do with the basilisk?
There was a telling and ominous silence from the blanket hill under which Harry hid.
Harry?
Hermione poked him repeatedly.
I am asleep.
Harry! Hulkers held Potter, is that what you were doing when I saw you whistling to the wall?
Draco was annoyingly smart and could stop being so at any point now.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I am asleep, and this is all a dream.
He tried to get the blankets to cover his head, but Draco had an iron grip on them. He fished for a pillow and dragged it on top of his face.
Oh my God, Harry, I can't believe you!
Exclaimed Hermione, who could in fact believe it very well, since she had been the one to realize it. She believed it so well that she had had to jump from her bed and come get Harry's denial or assertion.
It promised not to eat any students anymore,
Harry argued. On second thought, he should perhaps have mentioned the faculty to the basilisk, or some DADA teacher would end up petrified for sure, but mostly the basilisk had agreed not to harm humans. Hermione went back to her room, and Harry and Draco both tried going back to sleep. But falling asleep was hard, and instead Harry found himself excruciatingly aware of Draco's presence. The heat of his body, the movement of his chest, his breath, his heartbeat, the smell of his skin. Gosh, that smell that was like honeysuckle. The sound of his hair against the pillow. Why was he noticing all this? Why now? Why couldn't he just fall back asleep? The world was dark blue outside, almost black. Still at least an hour before sunrise. Harry had never liked sunrise. He would sleep until 11 every morning if he could. Instead, it felt as if a small basilisk of his own had come to stare at him and petrified him in the position they had been when Hermione left. Locked in a state of reverie in which you can't sleep, but you are not awake enough to tell your brain to stop thinking about that heartbeat next to yours. And about the fact that, judging by the rhythm of his breathing, Draco wasn't asleep either. He was just lying here, being Draco. That long-forgotten and ignored libido of Harry's was now laughing in his face.
Ha 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 ha! The libido said. Suffer, you sucker!
It was so loud Harry couldn't even spare a thought to wonder how come Draco, too, was lying there quietly pretending to be asleep. Perhaps Draco was equally unable to sleep because he had loud thoughts of his own, thoughts about how long Harry's hair was, and how it curled and got everywhere and contrasted so beautifully against the sheets, such hair. It was very nice, and Draco would like to touch it. He had touched it, braided it, and attempted to brush it. But he would like to touch it now differently. Bury his hands, and maybe let his thumbs rest on Harry's cheekbones, and something else. He wasn't sure of what, but something else. They were both tired and groggy in the morning. Not Hermione, though. She was not an early riser naturally, but she tended to pack her mornings full of activity anyway. Other than Voldemort's, or rather the dark wizard formerly known as Tom Marvolo Riddle's weird obsession with Hogwarts, they didn't have much on the hunt for Horcruxes, which Draco had started to call Horcruxi just to annoy Hermione. They could accept that maybe one of the Horcruxes was hidden in Hogwarts, but no more than one, and they had no idea of what it was. It could be anything, anything. Voldemort could have hidden his soul in a pebble or a canut, and no one would ever find it. He could have put his soul in a piece of parchment, and put the parchment inside any book in Hogwarts's library, and it would be safe forever. He could. But he hadn't. "Harry, when was the last time you saw a wizard act with any semblance of logic?" said Hermione, with her brows raised. Draco snorted with laughter. "You said it yourself. This man chose the name Lord Voldemort." The way she pronounced it, he could have chosen to call himself Mr. Evilpants, Master of the Universe. "He really isn't a lord," said Harry tiredly. It was almost as annoying as people saying you-know-who. He had no claim to the title. "Riddle, like, that is such a good surname. Who is this man?" "Oh, he's a Riddle." Hermione, it turned out, had her own grudges. "If he wanted to come off as mysterious, he had the name right there, and he went with I am Lord Voldemort." "You know, Lord Voldemort means theft of death in French," said Draco. "But it could also mean flight from death. Flight as in flying, not fleeing. I don't really... That name is a disaster." Which came to prove that he had not made a Horcrux out of a pebble, that he would then drop in a forest somewhere. He would go for something with deep magical significance. What? They didn't know. But Hermione had a good idea of who could know. Bertold Bagshot, magical scholar, author of Hogwarts: A History. And as soon as they could figure out how to properly arm themselves, they were going to pay her a visit. Hermione had lost her wand when she was taken. Draco had broken it, something no one let him forget. So cool, Draco, so cool. And yet, they had both inexplicably managed to make magic. They had both created their own wands, which raised the question of whether the feat could be repeated. If they wanted to go outside and learn more about Horcruxes, if they wanted to have even a remote chance of finding and destroying them, they needed to have as many wands as thinking heads. The problem, it turned out, wasn't so much to create their homemade wands, but to make them durable. No matter how light the spell, it would take the wand with it, just as the Patronus had left Draco's switch in shambles. Draco waved the last prototype with a doubtful expression. Absolutely nothing happened. "Evanesca," he said, pointing at the newspaper they were using for practice. The paper remained, but the letters T vanished from it. "Evanesco," he said one more time, carefully enunciating each sound. The paper vanished, but so did the wand, a small piece of oak soaked in goblin fire whiskey. It was all right. Certainly having a proper wand would be better, but there was much magic they simply couldn't do wandless, and this was kind of a solution. Disposable wands weren't the first choice, but they were something. Hermione had a box in which she had started to drop magical things that she thought could be used for a wand. She was thinking about getting a staff, because twice now she had seen that you could deflect a spell with the right materials, and you could also knock someone on the head with it. Eola Black left the house in shame after falling in love with a muggle. Well, her mother thought she had left in shame when she kicked her out of the house in her nightgown the moment she had learned of the affair. Eola, who had been born with great self-esteem and laughter in her mouth, shrugged it off and went to find her sweet Bob Hitchens. Bob didn't even try to have any hanky-panky with her, even though she knocked on his door in the middle of the night wearing only a silk nightgown. He was that nice. They had a long and happy life together, and Eola didn't miss doing magic because her wonderful husband bought her a car and taught her how to drive, and she was too busy becoming a female racer and mechanic. Most of her things were burned, and her father broke her wand himself since she didn't take it when she was kicked out. She left behind some clothes, a few books. She was responsible for the erotic French novels in a corner of the library that had Draco flushing and getting interesting dreams, and a seamstress basket with rather nice yellow ribbons intertwined. And there was a pair of knitting needles in there, long and sharp and made of silver. And the moment Hermione touched one of them, she abandoned all thoughts of a magic staff. This would be more manageable in any case. Hermione was all cold and hard logic. She had emotions, of course. She was a human girl, of course she had emotions, but she fought very hard not to let those emotions muddle her thinking. Hermione excelled in her classes because of her mind, and the few times she struggled with something, the Patronus charm, flying on a broom, it was because it required a certain unharnessing of emotions that she did not feel comfortable with. Silver is a funny material. It is inert. It is not organic like the materials that go in a wand, but there is something powerful in it. And Hermione could feel the needle aching to become a conductor. Magical, yes, but also solid and durable and stable. Magical, but also rational. She needed something else, though. Something with punch, like wand cores had. Only this was a solid piece of silver, so whatever she added, she would have to put it on the outside. For now, she practiced with the silver needle and found that she could levitate some objects and even accio them. The day she finally managed a lumos, the light was all white instead of blue, and it looked as if she had captured the light of a diamond or a star. Draco said it was one of the prettiest things he had ever seen, and then looked embarrassed about it. Harry was absolutely enthralled. Draco, for his part, just made everything explode. He could do the magic just as usual, almost, but the wand would vanish in his hands. If he was lucky, it would just vanish, but many times his disappearance was more abrupt, and according to him left his fingers smarting. Of course, wand was a generous term. They were using anything of an elongated shape and all kinds of materials. And here is the thing. Draco got back the dragonhide gloves he had taken when they went to rescue Hermione and practiced with them, and soon realized that they didn't have to make them wand-shaped for the wands to work. He could just hold the materials in his hands and squeeze them together, and he could cast a spell as smoothly as always. He could even cast them non-verbally, as demonstrated when he accidentally, totally not on purpose, lifted the front of Harry's shirt from his chest, and then, as he realized what he was doing, dropped it over Harry's head. "You look like a Dementor," Draco told him. And fortunately, Harry laughed and thought it was just a prank, and Draco being playful. He stopped thinking about Harry's belly button immediately, because it was just a belly button and he didn't care about it. If the thought came back to his mind multiple times during the day, Draco couldn't help it, and he wasn't responsible, because personally he didn't care at all. Draco's magic worked better, he discovered, if he held the wand in his fist and made the wand movements just as usual. He had to focus on where he wanted to send the spell, and that was hard. But they came with the same potency as with his old wand, and that was amazing all in itself, especially because they were running out of wooden things, and he was down to practicing with sawdust and whatever remotely magical material he could find.
"Oh, I know what you could use," said Harry excitedly.
"Well, okay, Harry was all flustered and rattled and not getting the words out. "With," he said, mimicking a belt and a shoulder strap.
"Hermione, you know, like a cowboy. Pang, pang."
Hermione had dropped divination in her third year. She had no idea what Harry was talking about.
"Yes, come on. Muggles use it, and you put—"
Harry mimicked putting some things on a belt.
"And then you take them."
Oh, I know what you mean," she said at last.
"What?"
Draco asked again, bemused and a bit annoyed that she knew what Harry was talking about. It was usually just him who could make sense of his ramblings.
"What's the word? I've no idea, but I know what you meant. In America, right?"
"Exactly." What they meant was that they could make Draco a bandolier, with little pouches of magical materials hanging from it. Draco refused because he did not think he had the kind of chest to pull that look off. But of course, Harry dug up some old Quidditch magazines from Sirius's room that were awfully concerned with the player's physique. Had they always been like that? Why was he just noticing this? And they thought of how to make him a cool harness or belt so he could have bags of ingredients with him. Creature was very helpful and provided the soft leather, and Draco remembered having seen some illustrations of pre-Statute of Secrecy wizards with something similar. Everything in the world has already been done.
"Harry."
Harry was still awake, but he took a few seconds to answer because he wanted his voice to come out smooth and controlled rather than as a surprised squeak, because he had been thinking that Draco smelled like honeysuckle and orchids and that if he were a taste, he would be lemon ice cream, no, lemon gelato, with a yellow and violet pansy on top. This was Harry's brain at any given time, but in the evenings and nights it went into overdrive. The thought brought a tingle to certain areas of his body. His belly, yes. If he was thinking about smell and taste, of course he should feel it in his belly or somewhere nearby, and in his mouth and throat. That's why he felt in his lips that phantom need to lick and bite.
Yes, he said, hopefully smooth and soft, like the aforementioned gelato.
Did you really smuggle a dragon into Hogwarts? Draco asked.
Oh, no, no.
Ah, it was out. We had to take it out of the school, obviously.
Obviously.
Well, it was growing very fast. It was becoming dangerous having him there.
A baby dragon, Draco said, turning over the sheets.
Draco was made of flowers and all the perfume of Persia.
You had a baby dragon that you had to take out of a school. No, wait, you were too angry then. It had to be someone else's dragon. And I suppose Weasley helped you because he has a brother in dragon work.
Charlie, yeah.
I didn't think that you would remember him.
Of course I do. He's the only remotely interesting Weasley.
Bill is a professional curse breaker, said Harry, quick to defend Bill's honor because Bill was nice and handsome, and it is possible that Harry fancied him a little in a kind of abstract way. He's cool, and he has an earring.
Overdone and cliché, Draco dismissed the thought quickly. Sirius would agree.
Was Hagrid keeping the dragon? It had to be him.
Who else would commit such an idiotic act?
That's very harsh, Draco.
That man let me get mauled by one of his beasts.
You insulted him, said Harry,
but without heat, because it was possible that under a certain light and from a certain perspective, Hagrid was a tad irresponsible. Harry could admit that. Hagrid had made them work with dangerous creatures, after all. That fourth year with the blast-ended Scroots, for example, not that they ever did anything to Harry, but even Ron and Hermione had been uncomfortable. And Hagrid did try to keep a dragon in a wooden hut. A wooden hut made of wood. Draco grumbled a bit more about the deficient state of security measures and adult supervision in Hogwarts before finally falling asleep. That night, Harry dreamed of a petulant dragon living in an orchard full of lemon trees.
No.
But listen, I just need...
You want to go, you need a wand, said Harry again firmly.
This is on the verge of becoming a wand,
Hermione argued, lifting her needle. She could do first and second year magic with it consistently. It was just the most advanced spell she was having trouble with.
And Draco was going wandless anyway.
Technically, I'm going with multiple wands, said Draco without lifting his head from the book that had him so interested.
Creature had finished embroidering the harness that morning, a beautiful piece of dark leather with a dragon running across it. The elf understood very well the need to look fashionable.
Hermione, no, we are not going to Godric's Gallow.
Godric's Hollow,
called Draco, still without moving.
It's too dangerous,
Harry went on, as if Draco hadn't spoken. And look at that. Harry, let's bring Gilderoy Lockhart as backup, Potter acting sensibly. Since Harry was so insistent that Hermione should have a finished wand, one that allowed her to do magic beyond third year without exerting herself, they searched the library for inspiration. Sadly, the book, How to Strengthen Your Wand, did not help at all, and had in fact quite a misleading title. The worst part was that they didn't figure it out until they reached page 17, which had illustrations. Harry wasn't sure who had blushed most out of the three of them, but Draco remembered something from his history books, either in the one that talked about Morgause, or in the one about Sir of the Red Hair. One of them, Sir or Morgause, kept in her possession a diary from an earlier witch, who may or may not be Morgana, because the girls were right, history didn't really record witches' actions or even names right. Anyway, there was an excerpt of the diary with a curse to make a man's heart break and throw him from his horse. Draco had thought it oddly specific. It only worked when the man in question was on horseback. And just before that, Draco was sure he had read something relevant to wand-making, only at the time it was called Staff of Power. At least he was pretty sure it was about wands. He had thought so at the time, but it came just before the instructions about how to make a man keel over and die, so he certainly wasn't sticking his neck out on that. Did anyone have any better ideas? No. It took them 2.5 days to find the damned paragraph, and it turned out to be in a chapter about someone called Guyar, after all. It said, "The black, the white, and the red shall giveth thee power untold, if gathered as the spirit twice gives way to the moon. Hast a pure maiden dressed in green, taketh the thorn and leaveth the bloom. Doth not speak nor cry to keep the power high." Isn't it nice when authors give easy-to-follow instructions? Actually, it was kind of simple to follow once he realized that this had been written by an English witch who never left the island, nor did she expect her readers to go anywhere far to gather their resources. and it most certainly referred to a power that could be used in a staff or a wand, and this was not a pun. Draco found her a green dress in less than 5 minutes, and Hermione picked the thorns in absolute silence at twilight in the night between Sunday and Monday. Really, the only trouble was the devil snare by the wall. Oh yes, because the black and the red and the white, they all grew in that snarling mess of vegetation they called their back garden. It was actually very simple if you paid attention to the words. The key was in thorn and bloom. Hermione had a tassel hanging from her needle wand, an off-yellow tassel pilfered from the same seamstress basket from where Hermione got the needle to begin with. But inside the tassel, there were now three thorns, one from a blackberry bush, one from a rose bush, and one from a hawthorn, which used to be called white thorn in older times. Harry provided the explanation for this last fact, something he felt he had known since before he learned to write. All three were common plants, but the blackberry fended off ghosts and dark spirits, the rose gave you strength in battle, and the white thorn was a gate to the other world. Hermione put them inside the tassel, and lo and behold, she could cast Expecto Patronum now. She had made herself a wand. Soon she would have to use it. They all would. End of chapter 7. For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 and Tumblr pages of Endrina. First pass editing by Ohana. Music by Sean Johnson. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information found on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. There you can also find all the other stories that I've read, as well as links to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.